Welcome to the Stanford University Women in Data Science podcast, where we interview women from across the field to hear their perspective on the past, present, and the future of data science. This podcast supports the efforts of our annual WITS Technical Conference, the Women in Data Science one-day conference that we have every springtime. We designed that to educate and inspire current and future data scientists from around the world. Welcome to the Women in Data Science podcast series. I'm your host, Margot Gerritsen, and today we're talking to Sonu Durgia. She's the Group Product Manager, Search and Discovery at Walmart Labs, where she leads search algorithms and computer vision for the company. Now, Sonu has a very interesting career. She's done all sorts of things. She worked at VMware, at Oracle, at KPMG. She started a company herself called Onboardly. We'll talk about this. And she also now serves as a board member for Get Magic, which is a volunteer nonprofit that encourages middle and high school girls to pursue STEM careers. Sonu received her undergraduate degree from the Indian Institute of Technology in Delhi, and her MBA from the University of California, Berkeley. So a very diverse background, Sonu, which is interesting. And so the first question that, of course, comes to mind when I look at a bio like this is, how did you end up at Walmart Labs?
Well, like you said, it's a very interesting journey. The experiences just kind of guided me this way. When I first came out of IIT, I started as a software engineer. My engineering career led me to Wall Street. And so naturally, I was working with the structured finance guys, equity research people, a lot of finance around me, bankers and traders. And so I started reading more about finance just to understand what I was doing, what I was building software for. And as I was reading more, I got more and more interested in finance. I signed up for the CFA program. I got my CFA charter and then an MBA. I wanted to really make a career transition into finance. And that's how my journey into KPMG and VMware, Oracle started. I was in the Bay Area. You know, some of these tech companies were great places to apply the things that I'd learned. Tech and finance was a perfect combination. I did a variety of things, from valuations to M&A finance, owning the total company models for both Oracle and VMware, which was a very good experience in terms of getting that 30,000 feet view of how a company functions, how different businesses come together, how to, invest, what is culture all about. And all those conversations were great. I liked what I did, but something was missing. There was that passion to create, to have a meaningful difference in other people's lives. And what I was creating was missing. I'm a very creative person on the side in terms of hobbies. I love to build things, create things. And so that part was missing. I enjoyed more building, interesting models than actually feeding numbers into them.
Like building software tools.
Software tools, yeah. Yeah, my models were actually more with macros and stuff to make them more, interesting and interactive and all that, rather than just a spreadsheet with numbers. At that time, one of my colleagues actually passed away very suddenly, very young. That was, in some ways, an inflection point. Like such things do to you, you start thinking about, what is life all about? You look for purpose and meaning. There's an urgency, suddenly, when you see life becoming so transient in front of you. And that was the time I said, I really want to find meaning in life and do something which has an impact and not just do this because I chose to be in finance now. One of the things that I had noticed being in the workforce for several years now was that a lot of women were leaving their jobs for work-life balance. Women, especially with younger kids. There was a study that came out of Harvard which said, more women than men quit their careers, even after Ivy League MBAs, in mid-careers. And that bothered me. There had to be a way for all these talented, experienced women to be meaningful to the society. And so I quit my job, and with a friend, we started to build a gig platform first, which was more about getting these women who still looked for stimulation, but connect them to the companies which had needs for consultants. And, being a hiring manager myself, I knew how hard it was to get people with good skill sets to do those smaller consulting projects. Sounded like a perfect marriage.
And this was consulting gigs in the finance sector?
Could be anything. So my friend was actually from strategy background and I was in finance. So we said, you know, we can bring all this experience, mostly MBA women, what we were targeting at the time. But what we found was that on paper that was true, in practice it was still very hard to get these women who'd made this choice knowingly, especially when they were financially comfortable, you know, otherwise because of their spouses being in a comfortable financial spot. It was very hard to actually get them to come back. And even for those shorter projects and sign on for a commitment. As I dug deeper, I was surprised with how men and women choose different things for work-life balance, you know, how we make different choices. Men don't make those choices as often. And why not? And more I read about it, more I talked to people, I felt our social conditioning creates these different, in some ways, mindsets on how we choose to do these things. And I think at that point I got more passionate about, yes, we need to do something about, you know, this gender disparity in the workforce, but also to bring it back down to how can we change the social conditioning from the get-go. You know, I had young kids and I saw what we as parents were doing to form those mental connections, the mindset that my son at the time had. And that's how Unboardly was founded in some ways. You know, I saw parents just choosing activities that other kids were doing just because they had no time to figure out what to do. We spend thousands of dollars on activities, but we don't always put in the thought, is this really right for my child? A girl is more likely to do gymnastics and a boy is more likely to do soccer just because their friends do those things. And we just feel comfortable in the thought that, oh yeah, you know, all the friends are doing gymnastics. Yes, you go for gymnastics too. We don't think, is this what my daughter really likes as a person? Not always. And I wanted to make that easy for busy parents. It takes courage, it takes time and initiative to make those, to defy the norm and find these extra things to do. Because every subtle thing, I think, forms and shapes us.
So that's when you started Unboardly, which is...
So it is a platform for parents to find activities, all kinds of activities, but also give very personalized recommendations based on a child's social, emotional state, learning style. We tried very hard to have a variety of choices in the activity mix and also show a very gender unbiased view of these activities. The pictures we had were more about kids from both genders playing all sorts of things, doing all sorts of activities and not the stereotypical style. So it was seated in there.
One of the things that I find fascinating about your career and it's inspirational to me also is your willingness to change. Now, coming from India to the United States, changing fields, going into finance and learning about that sector and then becoming very successful in that field and then leaving it, doing startups, which is another very courageous thing to do, and then somehow deciding that's not me anymore, I'm going to work for Walmart Labs. And that, so that last change, I'm very interested in hearing what drove you ultimately to go back to industry and what drove you to Walmart Labs.
So when Unboardly did not really work out the way I expected it to or wanted it to, it did not meet the financial goals, the metrics I'd set, both in number of users we would get by, you know, X number of months or the dollars we would make. It was an easy decision to not do that anymore. It was probably not the right solution. And I definitely did not want to keep going at that point. But I did get fascinated with the problem of search and discovery and recommendations in that process of doing Unboardly. Search became an interesting topic to me. And this opportunity at Walmart Labs surfaced through a friend at the time, and I said, why not? I'll go and talk to them and see what it takes. I would think that it would have been hard for them to just give me that position right away, given that I wasn't coming from a traditional search background. But partly I think they saw how I had been able to, you know, take a new career and deliver. I guess that's how I got in, and I did prove myself very, very quickly.
We often hear this, that what companies are looking for is not necessarily the exact skill set for a job position, but a risk-taking personality and agility. And of course, you have both of those very strongly. Now, you're working in search and discovery. And so I'm sure that people are wondering, what are you discovering What does that mean? Searching, we have an idea of what that means, but what do you do as a manager of search and discovery at Walmart Labs?
So discovery basically tends to mean more towards the browsing nature of the online commerce. And so search is when you are actually putting in a query, you type in a query, we show you the search results. Browsing is more about how do you find things that we think are interesting to you?
Like a recommender system.
It could be recommendations. It could just be, you going into what we call like a category and then going down the path of, okay, I'm interested in furniture today and then I really want to buy living room furniture. You go down that path of filtering through the catalog. But how do we present to you the catalog, with our scale? It's such a big catalog. We will not have your attention for the next several hours. We have to show you the right things very, very quickly. And so it's, again, a ranking and relevance problem right there, even though it's not coming from a query.
What has been some of the most fascinating and exciting discoveries for you in your position in Walmart Labs? Maybe new techniques that you've co-developed with your team members or some insights that you gained from the job that you just didn't have before and that really surprised you?
I think one of the interesting things that I've found, and this possibly goes back to the reason, why they hired me, was the problem we solved at Walmart, my team in Walmart Labs is a very technical problem. We have a bunch of data scientists working on with this huge amount of data we have around, our catalog, the structured data in the catalog, the customer engagement data, hundreds of millions of queries and billions of query item interaction. It's a lot of data, right? You take that data and you translate that into meaningful results for a problem. But how do you explain that to the business side, the retail side, which is not always as conversant or savvy in understanding these underlying technical solutions? And so a large part of my job is to be able to really understand the key problems retail has and taking that to the team and working through solutions on what are the most important things we are after. What is our target function here? What are we talking about? What should be the key features we should be going after in our algos? And that has been very fascinating. What I've found is that all my career, different digressions that you've seen, have basically come together. My engineering degree gives me the tools to really understand the algos and work with these engineers and very savvy data scientists. My finance background gives me that, bird's eye view of understanding what the key things are here. What is the key problem we are solving and how do we connect the dots? My onboardly experience lets me find creative solutions to problems. We have problems sometimes around how do we tie different data sets, how do we do certain things, and that unconventional background just gives me sometimes very creative ways to find solutions.
Now, so most people will know Walmart and probably have shopped there. Walmart Labs is not always a known entity. So it would be great to hear a little bit more from you about what Walmart Labs does. But the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is how big of a data company Walmart really is. The volume of data that Walmart has about consumer behavior, shopping preferences, is just unbelievable.
It is, and you're right. I think we have not always done a good job of marketing this, but we do have probably, one of the biggest and most interesting data set in consumer retail. Like I was saying earlier, that one of the largest catalogs, one of the largest customer engagement data set. You most of you know us via the Fortune 1 company as a store business, but Walmart Labs basically powers all of Walmart.com. But in general, Walmart is a very tech savvy and a data science centric company. We have data scientists embedded in every single team within the company. We do things not just for the .com business, but also for the store business. Things like scan and go, even looking at the grocery quality is through data science. The volume that we have, we cannot do everything manually. There's no way. Supply chain, everything has data science embedded in it.
And you have so much data that could teach you about human behavior.
Yes.
So that always fascinates me. I've asked some of your colleagues at Walmart Labs about this. You know, what have you learned about human behavior through data analysis? You know, the Walmart data that really struck you and say, wow, I never thought about this.
I think just the shopping patterns and the things people will do are very, very interesting that comes out. I don't know if you've done any special studies in the social aspects around it, or, you know, how humans are outside of their shopping experience yet. I think we definitely have that data to possibly do that. But just the, you know, what you think is not always true, and that comes out from data. And that sometimes is very fascinating to me when, you know, we come up with an hypothesis from the retail side, these merchants who've been trained to do things for years and years, and we have, what we find in data is not quite the same.
Can you give an example?
Things like where sometimes we will say things like, oh, this sells really well outside, and so should be something we should showcase. Hey, but Walmart customers do not want that. Right, so just those things, what you think is not always true. And so in some ways, data gives you, shows you the truth, and the algos actually let you stay honest to the customer and to the data, because we do have tools for our merchants to be able to kind of always play with merchandising and inventory if they wanted to. But of course, data wins. A customer is not going to buy something just because you show it to them. They will buy what they want and they will find it. And so those are very, very interesting things we learn as we power search for hundreds of millions of queries every year.
Now, I'm a big fan of recommendation systems. I use them all the time. Netflix, Amazon. I have to admit, I don't use Walmart.com very often, but I really do enjoy being presented with possible products, be it a movie or something that I would want to buy, that I may be interested in. Yet at the same time, I hear from a lot of people that they're a bit wary of this. They feel that their privacy is not really protected. You know, there's a lot you learn about people from their shopping behavior and their behavior online. And some people say, well, I feel manipulated, you know. So I am certain that at Walmart Labs, these sort of issues around data privacy, ethical questions come up often.
So I think as a company, we are very, very careful about protecting the privacy of citizens. We do not try to, there's no data that is exposed to the general employees, which can link any kind of behavior to any particular person. We don't have information that can tie back to an individual or anything like that. But you're right. And I think that's part of the dilemma. Data is powerful. It makes our lives easier. You know, you and I both know, without recommendations, imagine doing the kind of things we are doing today. And data is not just in recommendations, you're right. Everything, you know, the things we have done with voice, autonomous driving, everything is powered by all this data. And we need this data to do meaningful things. I live on online shopping. I do not go to any stores. My grocery comes online. And so I do need these things to work well. But at the same time, yes, you're right. There is a concern about privacy. And so I think as companies, we have to be very careful about where we draw the line. And recently, unfortunately, we found some issues with privacy. And I think it'll just make all these companies, all of us, a little more careful about how are we, you know, keeping that line and not really trespassing the customer trust here.
Looking at data science and these developments, what are you most excited about? You know, lift the veil. Is there something coming around the corner in Walmart Labs that you think is really going to make a big difference?
I think there are lots of fascinating things happening, and there will be things that you'll hear about, some things very soon, some things a little later. But we do a lot of things even within to make things, you know, more efficient, faster, better for our customers, not things that are always seen by people. Like we recently launched this service, which actually lets our grocery teams in the stores very quickly do quality checks on, you know, tons and tons of groceries that goes through our distribution centers. That's not possible. You know, it wasn't possible in the, you know, old world. And these things are meant to kind of, there are regulations around these things. So they're not just for our own efficiency, but also to maintain, you know, what are regulatory requirements. We're doing a lot of work around vision, voice, AR, VR, lots of fascinating things coming.
In your role at Walmart Labs, what has been the most challenging part? I mean, you mentioned earlier that the current position that you have is really pooling all of your previous expertises together, which is very interesting. What was your biggest challenge coming into this? I mean, you made this jump going into a new direction.
Yes, you're right. Probably not. I did not expect to be able to use everything that I learned before, apply it so easily. When I came in, I knew I was going into a brand new field and I would have to prove myself on the technical side. What I didn't realize and was a very pleasant surprise to me was that a large part of my job, and in any job, I think derives from how you connect the dots. And that is what I think gives me that edge sometimes over others because of my experience. The variety of experiences I have, I'm able to really bridge the gap and translate things, the language that business speaks and the data scientists speak. That was one of the biggest challenges we had for this team in particular, because it is such a technical team, to have the right skill set for product to be able to work with business and data scientists really well together.
The other thing I find fascinating about your career is that every step along the way, you've done something that is typically male-dominated. Software engineering, finance, right? And now working in the Valley in the data science role. How has that been for you? Now, is it, you seem totally comfortable in all your positions. Has it been difficult? And would you have, you know, from your experiences as a woman in this field, have some wise words of advice for females who are thinking about maybe entering this area?
I like to think it shouldn't matter. I know it matters because you don't have as many role models in front of you, but you can do whatever you want to do if you really want to do it. And you can be the role model, right? Why do we always need a role model? We can be our own role model to find those role models. And today, I think it's so much easier with technology. That gap has really become really, really small now. You know, back in the day, you just look at your peer group to find inspiration or even to solve some problems, ask about a concept you didn't get in class. But now YouTube is your teacher. You know, everything is available through these podcasts. You know, there's so much information available that you don't really have to depend on your core group around you to find those role models. And I think that has become, that probably is going to lead to a seismic shift in how many women can more easily do things. I think in the next few generations, we are blessed with technology. I think that's going to just close that gender gap to a large extent. Though I'm not saying there's not much to do here, there's still more to do, but that will at least close that information gap that I think was one of the bigger issues for me growing up. You know, I went to an all-girls school. I was the only girl who chose engineering at the time. I was the only girl in my engineering class sometimes. We were 15 in a batch of 250, but 320. But it was difficult. When your math professor is surprised to see a girl scoring 85% on a math test when 95% of the class is at 15% or lower, it doesn't feel good. By the same time, you do what you want to do despite all that. And the approach I usually take is you want to be the person that every man and woman around you wants to up their game when you are there, and not just, you know, find a reason to be, because I'm a woman, I need to do this way or that way.
That's really great advice. I also really like your positive outlook on how this can shift. Do you see those shifts taking place already in Walmart or Walmart Labs?
I think so. We have a lot more engineers and data scientists who are women. We see product managers, a lot of my team are women. So we do see those. It is slow, but surely it is coming. And I think it is primarily because we are, as a world, doing a lot more to promote women. You know, we see with this Me Too campaign, a lot more people have come out courageously about the issues that are out there. And once you, I think, define the issue, it is easier to solve it. In the past, I think we've not even called out some of these issues, and so they were kind of hidden. And a lot of women were just discouraged by the fact that there are these issues and nobody talks about them. But now they're out in the open. I think we will solve them much more courageously. Both the men and women will see the need to solve these problems and we will get past them.
You're a real engineer, I think, Sonu. You know, you identify a problem, you come up with a solution. Being outsourcing things in the home, or starting companies you think may be useful, or dealing with the still relatively low number of women in this field. So that's wonderful. What's next for you? Are you going to make another big plunge into something totally different?
I don't know. Life will tell. The only thing I can tell about myself is I am not scared of change. And so if there is a pressing need for me to do something radically different, I will. Or a pressing desire. One thing that I really feel passionate about, and I do not know how to do it in a systematic way, is this problem of starting this conversation out around social conditioning. How do we condition our men and women to feel like they are equals? They're human beings, you know. Gender is just one part of human being and not the defining feature, if you will, in the model.
And from your volunteer work at Get Magic, it seems that you think part of the solution may be educating children from a very young age on.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. So Get Magic is actually very interesting. It came to me when my daughter was just born. A friend introduced me to Get Magic and said, hey, we are looking for some people here. Would you be willing to help out with your time? When I had my daughter, even though I was very passionate about some of these topics from early on, that whole gender bias, gender discrimination became personal to me. I did not know how it explained to my daughter that she had to work harder to get the same promotion or the same paycheck as my son. I was already looking for ways to change that. And Get Magic is a wonderful, you know, little program. We have one-on-one mentorship for girls in middle and high school with women in the careers, in the technology field, STEM careers. They choose what kind of field they're interested in and we pair them up, be it in the same location or remote. And they work on a three-month hands-on project together. What that gives them is not just a role model, but also that safe environment to ask any question, to kind of see what life as a woman in tech is like, and kind of, I guess, get past that issue of, can I do this? Is this for me? And we have seen that almost 100% of our girls have gone into STEM education and careers from there.
And I'm sure it also helps them understand that failure or temporary setbacks, as I usually refer to failures, that they're just a part of the whole learning process. A lot of the women that I see here, you know, at university, they have a really hard time with that still. But I'm with you. I have hopes for this next generation. They seem to be more fearless, just like you. Thanks so much for talking to us. It's been really interesting to hear more about your career and all the risks that you took and the roles that you've been able to play. Thank you for that. We talked to Sonu Durgia, the Group Product Manager, Search and Discovery at Walmart Labs.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
That concludes this episode of the Women in Data Science podcast. Join us next time for another insightful discussion, and thanks so much for listening. To find out more about this podcast series or other Women in Data Science initiatives at Stanford, visit us at widsconference.org, widsconference.org.